AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true.
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Hello, welcome to Pulling the Music Apart. I'm Dave. Today, I'm delighted to have Nolia Russell, our good friend Savas, and our brother Matt join us.
Look, when I say our brother, not Savas's brother, because Savas is a brother from another mother. But, as our name suggests, we're here to explore and analyze music. On this podcast, we'll be talking about dysfunctional bands. Oh, juicy stuff. Savas, take it away.
Well, I'm going to start with something extremely juicy. This band is called Mayhem, and they are a Norwegian black death metal band. And the controversy is the lead singer topped himself, and then the bass player murdered the guitar player. And they were extremely influential in that kind of goth metal scene that was in Scandinavia, where they were going around burning churches and doing really chaotic stuff. And there were rumors that the lead singer that shot himself, fragments of his skull were used by other band members to make a necklace out of.
Wow.
So I think that is the most morbid and dysfunctional band ever.
It's going to be hard to
talk.
It's going to be really hard to talk.
I think the episode is dysfunctional, not disturbing.
Well, there you go. Well, this band's disturbed and dysfunctional. I think they really were into their craft, the death metal, black metal sense.
It was like they're in primary school.
I know. These guys took it to the next level. These Scandinavians are pretty morbid.
Geez, the reunion tour would be a little awkward, wouldn't it?
I'll be checking that out later on.
Yeah, Mayhem.
Are they touring?
I don't know. There is a full documentary made about it and about all the incidents, and it's all connected to that black metal scene in Scandinavia, which was really dark.
Well, I think we just about wrap up this podcast.
Let's not. Knowles.
Well, this doesn't seem worth mentioning after that.
Oh, yours would be good too, don't worry.
Oh, okay. So more commonly known, Fleetwood Mac and the dysfunctional relationship that she had with Lindsey Buckingham, who in the 70s, they were inseparable, madly in love. And she talks about how they lived off a diet of coffee and cigarettes, and they just needed each other and a room and a pen, and they just write, and it sounds terribly romantic. But it got to a stage in the 70s, later in the 70s, where things turned a bit sour, and the way that they were inspired to write their songs was by writing about things going on within the band.
Did that inspire the Rumours album?
Yeah.
That's what the album was about, wasn't it?
Yeah. But one of the songs that didn't actually make it to the mainstream songs from that was a song called Silver Springs. They put that on the B-side and it became kind of like a nothing song, but it was actually written when she was really, really, really upset, jealous, resentful, and just really hurt and blaming Lindsey for the lost fairy tale love that they had. She wrote it to haunt him. Anyway, it was released again in 1992. It really gained attention when they did a live performance during their reunion tour in 1997, and that was captured on the album The Dance. It's become a bit of a legend in terms of their lost love.
Have you seen them perform that song on stage?
Yeah.
I think last 10 years, 15 years. It's a very passionate performance.
It really is.
They sing at it. each other. You can see the anger. I don't know. Really.
The chain or what?
No, we're talking about Silver Springs.
Yeah. Oh, because that's a duet they also do together and you see them perform that together.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. If you don't love me now, you'll never love me again. Some of their best songs were written from all the heartache. And it wasn't just Stevie and Lindsay that had a relationship. Russell, we've spoken about this before. Do you know a little bit about the relationship between Christy McVie?
Well, I know a bit about the Christine McVie and John McVie thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, they were married.
Yep.
You know, same surname and everything. It kind of gives it away. I love the story about
Mac.
You Make Love and Fun.
Yep.
A lot of people thought it was a love song she wrote about John McVie. It was, in fact, a song she wrote about, I think, a lighting guy or sound engineer.
Oh, right.
She was getting off with during a tour. Getting off. That's the correct term, isn't it?
Getting on, getting off.
But Lindsay, it was a little bit of a tit for tat. Yeah. During that songwriting period in 1977, he wrote Go Your Own Way. And that's actually a very angry song.
Mm. Mm.
But it adds to the performance, makes people connect with him even more.
And it was probably the genesis of their most successful album ever.
Yeah.
And one of the top-selling albums of all time.
Absolutely.
In Rumours. That's a great one. That's good.
Was Rumours the first album they did as that lineup with Stevie Nicks and Lindsay
Buckingham? Yes, I think it was,
yeah. Yes, it was.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, Fleetwood Mac were a three-piece band with Peter Green before that.
That's right.
And then Chris McVie came in.
So they were a British band originally.
Right.
So with, as I said, Mick Fleetwood, John McVie, hence the Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah. And then
they were a blues band originally.
Yeah, bluesy.
Oh, that big instrumental song they had, Albatross.
Albatross.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Who came in first?
Was John Stewart a part of the band? The bloke who did Gold?
Right.
I think he may have had a stint with them.
I heard rumours they actually wanted Stevie Nicks only, or was it Lindsay Buckingham they wanted? No, they wanted a guitar player. They wanted Lindsay Buckingham, but he wouldn't join the band unless they hired Stevie Nicks as well.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
It could be a rumour.
There's a lot of rumours going around.
Great one.
And what album superseded Rumours? Was it Tusk, or was that later on?
No, Tusk was 79.
79.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That may have been because that was a double album, wasn't it?
It was a big album too. Very successful as well.
Yeah.
And obviously also a lot of tension in Fleetwood Mac because Stevie Nicks had a really big problem with painkillers and cocaine and all that kind of stuff. So that caused a lot of dysfunction in the band because...
The problem, I thought she was enjoying it.
Yeah, well, I think it was the 1987 Tango in the Night album that had Big Love on it. And she was really struggling to try and get off everything. And they found her incredibly difficult during that whole process. But that was the beginning of her actually, I think, trying to get things back on track personally. But yeah, that also had a big impact on the band, as many other bands, with the reliability of them turning up to things and being a little bit not present.
Has anyone here seen them live? I haven't.
Russell, you have.
Oh, you have?
Your experience wasn't the best.
So this would have been 1985 in Melbourne. For our overseas listeners, at a venue called Rod Laver. And that was, 85. So they were all battling big time with substance abuse. I mean, they openly admitted all that. They acknowledged just how disrespectful they were to their audience. And it's honestly one of the worst performances of any band I've ever seen. They were fluffing their lines. They were forgetting that they had to sing, and they looked off their face.
The whole band.
The whole band.
Wow. Yeah.
I was so disappointed because I remember, obviously, I wanted to go.
Hmm.
And I was like, what was it like? What was it like? What was it like seeing Stevie Nicks? Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God. I was like, I just wanted to hear everything.
I think everyone wanted their money back.
Yeah.
Within about half an hour, it was obvious to most people in the audience that this is not going to be a good performance. I think most people left. It was
isn't
just
that
an
crazy?
Embarrassment.
Wow.
One of the most successful bands in the world.
Yep.
And the only time you've seen them, and unfortunately you got to see them.
But I saw them at a day on the green many years later. And
like a different band?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we can confidently say that substance abuse makes bands extremely dysfunctional.
Oh, my goodness. But not just that. I actually saw something very recently. Robbie Williams was accepting an award and he goes, I'd like to thank drug, depression, dyslexia. And he listed all the things that were wrong with him.
Yeah.
He goes, without all of these things, he goes, I wouldn't be here today.
So drugs are a good thing.
Well, inspirational.
Yeah. I think he was using all of his negative qualities to make it sound like, well, actually, this actually inspired me to make something of myself and make, you know, I couldn't spell, I couldn't read, I was all these kinds of things. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Some of the best songs have been written from dysfunctional relationships in bands. And that even extends to ABBA.
Yep.
If you think about ABBA, they were all with each other.
Yep.
And
two married couples, even after they both separated and ultimately divorced, they still continued to perform.
Oh, and the winner takes it all.
That's right.
It was about Agnetha and...
was it Benny?
The pretty blonde one.
The pretty blonde one and the skinny one.
And there was the two girls as well.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. They were nice. They were lovely too.
Yeah, but how many good love songs were made from that?
Oh. Yeah, Mamma Mia.
Knowing me, knowing you.
And probably a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek, you know, gimme, gimme, gimme. Yeah. You know, I'm going to go out on the town with the girls and get a man after midnight.
What's funny is probably Ben and Bjorn wrote that song. It's funny, they probably did.
Probably.
Yeah. Gimme, gimme.
I don't know where Bang a Boomerang came into it.
As their Aussie tour.
Down Under. It was ABBA Arrival, wasn't it?
Arrival. That was their, I thought that was their final album. I remember the album cover where they're in a helicopter.
To have been called Departure.
I remember that was the first one. I had a jumper with that on it. Mm-hmm. And that's when I became obsessed with singing. I remember singing Money, 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 you know, like when I was really, really little. They were my first, you know, music inspiration.
Was that pre-Xanadu?
Absolutely. And who would like to go next? Russell.
Yeah, oh, look, I don't think mine's going to be anywhere near as detailed as yours with Fleetwood Mac. Who knows a band called Little River Band?
Yeah.
So an Australian band. They had huge international success, as we know. Mega hits. Probably a bit of a yacht rock band by today's standards. We should have a topic on yacht rock.
I think we should straight after this.
What a great idea. Yeah.
So Little River Band still exist. And I think they mainly tour in the States. The only thing is, there's not one original member. And sadly, and I don't know how this came about, David, you might know, the rightful owners, in my opinion, you're Glenn Shorrocks, V. Birtles and Graham Gobels, should be the rightful owners to the songs and all the rights. But somehow it was sold to an American bloke.
It may have been the American guy who later became their bass guitarist.
Stephen Housden. So he owns the rights. So they, as I said, they still tour, but there's not one original member. I understand that the ex-members of the band can't even call themselves the group formerly known as Little River Band. They'd get sued, sadly. How does that sort of thing happen?
Was it Birtles or Gobels? I can't remember. I think it was Birtles that dominated the band in regards to telling him like a dictator.
Graham Gobels.
Graham Gobels. He was considered himself to be the boss.
Well, yeah, he was. I mean, he was the boss of Mississippi, which morphed into Little
River
Band.
They did too. Yeah. That's right.
Was he responsible for getting rid of Shorrock and getting Farnham in?
I think they may have disbanded because of him.
Yeah, I think they left because
difficult to work with. And as you said, they had to change the lineup. The lead singer, John Farnham, came and did what, two or three songs?
Didn't do much, but
no,
yeah.
And that didn't last either. But what an amazing band. And it's just a sad thing. Yes, it's a dysfunctional band. And there's people who would obviously go to those concerts who wouldn't even know that these aren't the originals.
It sounds similar to the story of Creedence Clearwater Revival, isn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah.
John Fogerty now just tours with his own name.
Yep.
And I don't think he can use the name Creedence Clearwater because the other members have ownership of it. Oh, I don't know, but there is a lot of legality like that too.
How does that stuff happen?
I know, because I mean, when you think Creedence Clearwater, you think John Fogerty. So
I know a little bit more about that.
Yeah, cool.
Well, the record company who had the body of work of Creedence Clearwater Revival attempted to sue John Fogerty because his solo song "The Old Man Down the Road" sounded very similar to the Creedence song "Run Through the Jungle." Now they wanted to sue him for plagiarism,
right?
For ripping his own song off. He wrote both songs.
Wow.
Like, okay. He won the court case. I mean, surely, I guess they went with the angle, well, this is our intellectual property now.
Mm.
Fancy trying to sue somebody for ripping themselves off.
Mm.
Similar thing happened with the Glenn Miller Band. I saw them in Melbourne about 25 years ago, the Glenn Miller Band, and I'm tipping Glenn Miller wasn't there.
Right.
What about you, Matthew? Do you have a dysfunctional band that you can think of?
No.
Well, do you have an opinion on one I'll bring up? And that is Van Halen.
Definitely not.
Did you like Van Halen?
Is that John?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, they were all right.
Yeah. So original lineup was with David Lee Roth.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it changed over to Sammy Hagar later on.
There was another singer too after Sammy Hagar.
Who was that?
Gary Cherone of Extreme.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he joined for an album and a tour.
Right. And
Mr. Baby Animals.
Yeah. that was his little co-host. Who was it? Nuno Bettencourt.
Nuno was married. Is married to
Susie DiMarchi.
Yeah. Anyway, going off topic again.
Yeah.
He finished up with Van Halen in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
due to creative differences and internal tensions. That's like when people get divorced. What do they call it? There's a term that every single irreconcilable differences.
Right.
Or something like that.
It's the equivalent. Just headed in the wrong direction.
Yeah. We just grew apart.
We grew apart. That's it.
Yeah. And David Lee Roth, to me, was an amazing frontman. He had so much energy. I don't know if you've ever seen any footage of it, but he used to just split his legs up in the air, jump in the air. He must have had some kind of gymnast background.
He did it. All of his own stunts. What's that one? Was abseiling down.
The video clip for
Just Like Paradise.
That was him.
Doing it
himself.
He also liked to wear spandex.
So drugs. Drugs and spandex.
Well, I used to like wearing spandex too.
You did too. I remember. That night?
I was on stage, don't worry.
No, it was actually in our friend's lounge room. Anyway, he made a grand entrance in, I believe it was purple spandex, and you were playing Queen.
Pink.
Oh, pink, sorry.
You were playing pink.
I was in pink spandex.
Anyway, so Eddie Van Halen and David Lee Roth and the whole band, they were obviously into the whole drug scene and all that kind of thing. Things got out of hand, and David Lee Roth, you should see some of his interviews. You can see that he would have been a lot to deal with because he's so egocentric and that sort of thing. But at the same time, I just really loved his voice, and I loved the energy that he brought, so much so that when he brought out his solo album, Yankee Rose, I loved it.
He was wearing a big feather headdress. It wasn't called Yankee Rose.
Well, the Yankee Rose was on it. Hang on. Maybe it does have another name. I've got the album. I should know this.
Yeah. Well, there was the Skyscraper album, which was afterwards, which features Steve Vai.
Eat 'em and smile.
With the cover, yeah.
Yeah. I just remember thinking, wow, like this guy is awesome, you know. And now it's a bit sad because he's wearing the leather outfit and he looks old and it's sad.
No more spandex.
He's trying to. And also, because he did indulge so much in cocaine, he's ruining his voice.
He was dancing with the white lady.
Nobody looks good in spandex as we get older, though.
As you know.
It could come back into fashion, you never know.
Eddie Van Halen, God rest his soul, like he used to party with him, but it just got out of control again and couldn't keep up with it. And so that's why it just didn't work out anymore. And then he came back again in
early 2000s or mid
2006.
There you go. With Wolfgang Van Halen on bass. They kicked out Anthony.
Yeah. And it didn't work out. It just didn't work out.
Hasn't changed a bit.
Yeah. That's what happens when you have too much of a
I referenced this once before, his cover of California Girls.
Yeah, it's amazing. But
it was amazing and fun. He hit the note and
I just recently found out too, he actually wanted to be an actor.
His father wanted him to be a doctor.
Right.
Yeah.
But seeing what he looks like nowadays, he's touring the circuit doing impersonations of former Australian rules footy player Warwick Capper.
He's impersonating himself.
Anyway, sad decline, but Sammy Hagar did a great job, you know, Sammy Hagar.
Oh, he was sensational.
So they had a lot of, they didn't like each other, but they ended up doing a tour together. Is that nuts? That was like crazy. I couldn't believe they actually toured together, but they did. And then,
Any other examples of dysfunctional bands, David?
The Eagles, certainly not without their problems.
Mm.
What a great West Coast sound they had, and country rock, all that kind of thing. After a few years, Don Henley really, he took the reins. He said, okay, hey, Glenn Frey, you're a great singer. I'm actually making the words up here, but a great singer. But I think relegated him mainly to just songwriting, and Don Henley became the voice of the band. And I know something we've touched on before, but very short version of it, the Long Run album, which was, I think eventually came out in 1979, took 3 or 4 years to make. It was called The Long Run. It was supposed to be a double album. They didn't come up with enough songs. They came up with 45 minutes worth of songs. Don Felder of the group publicly announced his displeasure with how the band seemed to be falling apart and it's taking so long. How can it be this hard just to come up with these songs? So they gave him the Tijuana Brass. It's like, can't say anything bad about the band, can you?
That's rhyming slang for ass.
And they broke up shortly after the band. The the long run
international listeners
was released, and then we know about the Hell Freezes Over thing,
right?
Because when Don Henley was asked, "Will the Eagles ever get back together?" he said, "When Hell Freezes Over, it will."
Right. Great name for an album.
There we go. 1994, they reunited for that. That
I tour. Know.
Isn't that something to talk about though? When they came back.
Oh, yeah.
1994. And you're talking about irreconcilable differences.
Yeah.
They were never, ever going to reform under any guise. I don't know how they brokered the deal, but we've all seen that absolutely stunning version of Hotel California. Yeah. I clearly remember them all seated on a stool, did a beautiful version of it. And I think just relaunched them.
I think the raw talent in that group is off the charts. And I personally love, one of my favorite Eagles songs is I Can't Tell You Why. And Timothy B. Schmidt wrote that.
Beautiful song.
Yeah.
I love it.
I've got too many favorite Eagles songs there.
Timothy B. Schmidt influence, he did write that song too. They tried to revisit that song with another Timothy B. Schmidt song from the Hell Freezes Over album called Love Will Keep Us Apart.
Love Will Keep Us Alive.
Alive.
Not apart.
Well, I'm going to look at the dark side of things.
That was Carol Bayer's
song, wasn't it? We'll keep us
and you know who else covered that? Wendy Matthews covered that.
She really? Too,
yeah. And guess who else covered it? Me, at a friend's wedding.
Mm. Anyway, what were we talking about?
I just remember that when you spoke about the Hell Freezes Over tour, you know, it was probably, I don't know, guessing the late 90s.
94.
They released it on a DVD and the concert.
That's right.
And I just remember I was looking to share a house and I went to this home of a guy. He was an older guy and he was in his living room when I went to go have a look at the room, and he was a massive Eagles fan and he had an amazing setup, you know, with the hi-fi speakers and a big television, and the Hell Freezes Over concert was on. He goes, "Sit down and watch a bit." And I just remember being there just mesmerized going, how amazing is this band?
Yeah.
Every member's phenomenal. It blew me off the planet.
When you've obviously seen the DVD.
I think it was a DVD.
You guys are so fancy.
Yeah, Blu-ray.
So when I rewound my tape after watching the concert, no, but there was actually, I think it was a two-disc DVD.
Right.
One of the discs was all about the backstory, the lead-up, the fact that they got back together and told that story about when Hell Freezes Over. But one of the really interesting things that I got out of this is, and the reason the Eagles are so good when they perform, they're amazing performers. They say they rehearse before every concert, every single concert rehearse. And I think whoever was doing the interview said, "Why do you do that? You know these songs already." We respect the audience that much. We want to get it right and we want to make it as perfect as we possibly can. And having seen the Eagles, they performed in Melbourne, which is where we all live, what, in about three or four occasions? I think they've had their final tour now.
Three times.
One of the best performances I've ever seen, apart from me singing in the shower.
Right. Yeah.
On a par.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
Shall we touch on Gordon Sumner?
Who's that?
Sting.
Sting.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Why not? Because it sounds like he might be a real prick of a man, doesn't it?
Well, you know, I don't want to think he is, but he kind of does give those vibes, doesn't he? Mm. Do you want to talk about that, David?
No, I want to hear you, because yeah, I know
before
you know.
Do that, Noel, yeah?
Yeah.
I'm going to play a chord and see if you can guess the song. Just one chord.
Yep. It's been a hard day's night. Yeah, that's what I thought.
I'm trying to pick up Sting from
a
that.
Sting from yeah. that, yes. That's where it's
coming. Rock song?
Correct.
There you go. Yeah. When he got it right, yeah, we have to do that. Okay. Yeah.
So tell us, Gordon Sumner and his two mates, Stuart Copeland, who was really the boss of the band, and Andy Summers. Now, yeah, you know a bit about the tension with this trio, don't you?
Yeah. So the song, I Believe It Was Over, particularly is Every Breath You Take. Which is obviously everyone knows that song. They were all part of the writing process, the songwriting process. But I believe that every time it gets played, it works out to Sting receiving about £500,000 per year.
Yeah.
And he's the only one that is getting the money for that.
So the other two get squat?
Yeah. Why? So I don't know.
It's because he's a prick of a man?
Right.
Yeah,
maybe. Okay. I don't know. That is the battle that they're having at the moment. Which is really sad, because the way I look at it, how many decades have these guys been together?
Yeah, well, they've been going since the 40? Late 70s, yeah.
40s.
40 years. But the thing is, they become like a family, right? And then they turn on each other. It's just so sad. I don't know. It's the same for Daryl Hall and John Oates.
Yeah.
How many great songs have they written? They just look like they were so in sync the way they performed.
Is it a power struggle, do you think?
I think that Daryl Hall is probably a bit of a control freak when it comes to those issues.
My personal opinion, he's probably the more talented of the duo.
Yeah, well.
He wrote the majority of their songs. If not all of them.
Yeah, but the thing is, what happened was, so John Oates wanted to play the songs he's been playing for decades in a show because they're no longer together. And Daryl Hall's like, no, you're not allowed to because I wrote those, so you can't do it. And I just think that's petty.
It's petty, but I love watching him. He still does podcasts. I think he gets little guest musos. I saw one recently where he included Joe Walsh, okay, and they did a great version of Rocky Mountain Way, of course, in some country property that he has. Check it out. Really good.
But what about
stuff.
John
Oates? Where is he?
He's just the little guy with the mustache.
He looks like the bloke off Mario Kart.
Hey, I just think that he, you know, there's so much that he would have contributed to them making a success.
Well, I suppose Hall and Oates sounds better than just calling a band Hall.
Or just Oates would be weird.
Right.
Or Hall and the little guy with the mustache.
Toasty,
yeah. Yeah, true.
Yeah, I think of breakfast when I think of.
I just think of egos and greed when it comes to them fighting over this because we all know
that's enough about us. But what about Hall and Oates?
But we all know that they're all extremely wealthy people, right? So they're sort of squabbling over money that they don't have to worry about money, right? Mm. But I think to myself, what are they doing this for? Are they doing it for their grandchildren? Like, do they want to make sure they've got a legacy? Do they want to make sure they've got as much money as possible?
I think it's ownership. Like, you know, I wrote this song. It's mine. It's my property.
It's their baby.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it goes beyond money.
Yeah, I think so.
It's more about their own fame.
Right.
I mean, can't they try and do it without dragging each other through the legal process?
At least do it for us and make out that they get on.
Mm.
That's right.
Like Aerosmith.
Yeah.
Isn't it a similar story with Simon and Garfunkel?
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had their differences and their rifts and their separations over the time, but when they come together, they still sound awesome.
It's like a metamorphosis, isn't it, when they get off stage? Mm. Matt, I think, were their rifts so intense that they were actually getting physical with one another?
I didn't know that. But there'd been many over the journey.
I've actually read somewhere that, don't quote me, but someone pulled a knife or something, one of the duo.
Mm. Right.
Yeah, it got really threatening.
Mm. It can get nasty. I remember being in the rehearsal studio and the bass player threw his guitar across the music room at the guitarist's head.
Right.
Oh, was it the guitarist throwing it at the bass player's head? But anyway, it can get nasty.
That's called passion.
It's a fine line, isn't it?
It's a fine line between passion and murdering your one of your band members.
Yeah, well, and then making necklaces out of his...
Oh, yes.
I thought you were going to do a Divinals reference right there.
I was thinking about it.
Passion and
pleasure and pain.
Pleasure and pain.
But the thing is, they've done it once, they'll do it again.
Right.
Yeah.
We all touch ourselves.
I saw seeing you wearing a Skyhooks t-shirt. Was there any controversy in that band? Were they dysfunctional? I'm assuming there must have been.
Nah. Not, no. I don't really recall hearing anything bad about the Skyhooks and... I'll have you know, if you say anything, I'll be defending them.
I love them.
I think they're great.
Oh, yeah. No, but how could you get upset with Shirley Strawn?
I know.
No.
Red Simons, though, you could, because he could really ruffle a few feathers.
I think he was just, that was an act for him, that grumpy persona.
Mm.
Do you?
You don't like him?
No, I met both of them, and I'm exactly right. Shirley Strawn is just the nicest guy you'd ever want to meet.
Yeah.
And
you'd have Red to be with him in the pub, wouldn't you?
Red was a bit of a creep, to be honest.
Yeah.
Did you crack on to your wife?
No. Well, not my wife, no.
I remember he cracked on to someone that he knew.
Yeah, they did. He did, yeah.
Sending out a cheerio to Red.
I'm sure he's evolved into a wonderful human being, he was a bit of a creep back then. But I don't think they had any dysfunctionality. I think Red went into his celebrity sort of stuff and so did Shirley, and I think there's probably more money in that for them. And that's probably why the band broke up.
And then he did Shell's Neighbourhood with Claude the Crow. Oh, I loved that show. Yeah. But I really was only very small at the time.
So for anyone listening to the pod overseas, Skyhooks, you more than likely haven't heard of them, but they went on Aussie Institution. They're one of our acts that we're proud to call Australian, like ACDC, really, aren't they? They're proud of them.
Anyway, back to the dysfunctional theme, a band who had two members who really, I think they disliked each other, could never reconcile their differences, Pink Floyd.
Yes.
David Gilmour and Roger Waters.
Yeah.
Both very talented. You know, you've got David Gilmour, one of the greatest guitarists, songwriters, great singer as well. And then Roger Waters, who's an okay bass guitarist and a bit bonkers, but both very talented, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Can I guess which one you prefer out of the two?
Was I maybe too subtle, or do you reckon you nailed it?
One was an okay bass player, but they were both talented.
There's no denying David Gilmour is just amazing. But I think Roger Waters, Roger Waters, how many songs did he write in Pink Floyd?
Most of them.
I didn't think
wrote
think
the
that,
whole album.
Okay, but I thought that he wrote a few opposed to David Gilmour wrote the majority. I'm sure I saw an interview just recently with David Gilmour saying that, you know. No, there was, I'll get back to you on that.
Well, if you're thinking about the 70s, if you're thinking about Wish You Were Here, that album, Animals, Dark Side of the Moon, and The Wall, definitely was Roger Waters, but he left the band
in
the 80s. And then Dave Gilmour took over.
Dark Side of the Moon. He only wrote three songs.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
They were the better songs too.
Four songs?
Roger Waters.
No, Roger Waters only wrote a few songs on Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh, right, on that album.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yes.
Well, on the theme of dysfunctionality, we've talked about Pink Floyd. Remember when they had a different lead singer in the band? Because Dave Gilmour took over Syd Barrett's place, and Syd Barrett actually went mad.
Syd Barrett wrote arguably the best, their best composition ever, honouring Barrett.
Mm.
And that was Shine On You, Crazy Diver.
Yeah,
that's my funeral song, by the way.
Right.
We're really on the dark theme, aren't we?
The dark side of the moon.
Exactly.
Yeah, because yeah, they had a big hit called Emily in the 60s, the original Pink Floyd.
Oh, that was a very different sound.
Very different Pink sound.
Floyd. It sounded a lot like Herman's Hermits. It was not the Pink Floyd we eventually knew,
We've got a British friend called Russell, and he's a massive Pink Floyd fan. The original Pink Floyd was Syd Barrett, and he named his daughter Emily after the song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he was that much into them.
Right. Did he think about calling her Vera?
Well, no, he was a Syd Barrett fan.
Right.
Roger Waters had a significant solo career, though.
He did. Radio Waves was a big song.
The Tide Is Turning.
That was from Radio Chaos.
Sorry, there was the one before that, The Pros and Cons of Hitchhiking as well.
There you go.
Good album. I did like the album.
Yeah. Mm. Everything he does seems to be highly politically based.
Oh, 100%.
That's going to put some of the fans out of favour if they don't agree with his politics.
Yeah, that's right. Did you ever see Pink Floyd?
No.
Is it a regret?
I don't like to say it's a regret, but did they tour Australia very often?
Yeah, they definitely came to Australia.
I saw them on the Momentary Lapse of Reason tour.
Mm-hmm. You saw them?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, as far as the performance it was going, it wasn't what you'd call energetic. It was a good light show and Dan Gilmour, you know, just a guy with the guitar. That's really what you saw. But great music. Loved it.
Well, yeah, I would have thought the concert probably wasn't as entertaining as you'd want it to be, but the music would have been awesome.
Yeah.
Mm.
That's how I found it.
A bit like Dire Straits.
Well, that's a great example of a band who are just there for their art. There's no real stage presence with Dire Straits. I mean, they'll look at the other players in the band rather than even look at the audience.
Yeah.
That's dysfunctional.
Might as well sit there with your eyes closed and your ears open.
Oh, well, so I was upset that I didn't go to that concert, but maybe it wasn't that much that I missed.
But you've still got the albums.
Mm.
Well, that's all for this episode. If you have any questions or just like to leave a comment, feel free to reach out to us on Instagram at Pulling the Music Apart. Our next episode's almost ready, so stay tuned. It's released. Until then, keep listening to the music, and thanks for tuning in.